Welcome to episode 60 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is November the 18th, 2012. I am Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my turkey-eating brother, James Furlough.
Oh, dude, it's coming up. You know what's kind of disappointing? So what's exciting is that my parents are coming up to hang out with me for Thanksgiving. But
yeah.
What I don't understand is, for whatever reason, my brother is not.
Yeah, so
why do you think that would be, Matthew? Give me your expert opinion.
Your parents turns out that they wanted to leave right when your brother is working. And as I've recently gotten a promotion, we actually have, you know, we're doing some good business.
You have to work.
And we have a pretty tight time frame. It's kind of important that I go to work. But this is the good news. You know, usually
you'll be driving home on Sunday, so that's cool.
So the good news for me is usually our family has a big Thanksgiving dinner at our grandma's house, and all the aunts and uncles and show up and everybody, and guess what?
Minimum of 20 people.
They are not doing it this year, so I don't have anyone to have Thanksgiving with.
Wow.
I was just like, it was like suddenly yesterday everybody was like, where are you going to Thanksgiving? I was like, I don't know, grandma's house? Oh, grandma's doing it over here. Well, what about these people? Oh, they're doing it here, here, and here. What about these people? Oh, they're here, here, and here. And like, even our sister wasn't going to be there. She's doing – so I'm like
– well, here's what you do. Here's what you do, man. Just get a plane ticket for Wednesday night. Come on up to PDX. I'll pick you up. It'll be good. Drive back home with mom and dad. Just mull it over. You have a real job, man.
Mull it over. That's not an awful idea. But anyways,
but we're not here to talk about our family.
We are not here to talk about Thanksgiving. And you know what? We're definitely not here to talk about Christmas, so I won't even bring it up.
My wife hates it. Her birthday is right after Thanksgiving, and it kills her. Kills her when retailers skip right over Thanksgiving, just right to Christmas. She's like, what the heck? It's Thanksgiving. We live in America.
Like whenever somebody like watches a Christmas movie or like listens to Christmas carols, I'm like, turn that off. Don't reward bad behavior.
Sweet.
But you know, yeah, let's let Thanksgiving happen, then we'll all have fun together. Anyways, what we are here to talk about this week, like every week, is technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, most especially, the technology that they are developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, James got a short disclosure he's got to throw out there.
Yes, I work for HP. However, I do not represent any of HP's opinions throughout this podcast. So whenever you hear me talking about HP, it'll be from my own vantage point. And I find it, I think it's important to note that I love working for HP, and HP is an excellent employer. Even though there may be times when we don't say awesome things about them, working for HP, amazing. I felt compelled to let people know. I actually really do like my job.
No, that's good. That's good. That's good. Hopefully it'll be there in a couple of years.
You see, it's comments like that that make me concerned. Because there's a grain of truth in there. HP will be around. I'm fairly certain of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If GM made it, HP will make it. But what parts of HP?
Yeah, it just made it look different. That's
more
all.
Interesting question. That's not one of our topics tonight, believe it or not. If you want to follow us throughout the week, get our updates about Thanksgiving and the Twilight movies and all sorts of fun things, you can follow our Twitter accounts. My Twitter is @MatthewDFurlough.
Mine is at James Furlow, which recently might have been all about going to watch movies. I don't know what happened, but it was like all of a sudden, all the cool movies decided to come out. So I saw like, yeah, I've just been seeing a bunch of good movies.
Dude, I'm so far behind. I want to watch a lot of movies because the only movie I've seen, there's a bunch of cool movies out, and the only one I've seen is The Twilight.
Are you s Yes, awesome. Well, actually
Which
that's the one I haven't seen yet, but I will eventually because my wife wants to see it.
I'll be honest, I really enjoyed the experience. I got to go with one of our
Yeah, let me hear
cousins.
this.
And I like it. We went opening night Friday night, and 8 o'clock, so it's just big theaters packed, everybody's super excited, and it was just like, which I like that whole atmosphere of it. I really like it. And you and I am embarrassed to admit to everybody, but I've been telling everybody all along, you and I used to watch Charmed on a regular basis, and
It's awesome. Wow.
it's like a teenage version of Charmed. It's just a soap opera with a little bit of fantasy thrown in. And so
Little bit being
I
the undercurrent there, but yeah.
right so I enjoyed it. I mean, there are things that I don't want to spoil it for
Well, let me
anybody.
ask this. Is there at least a fraction of a little bit more of action in this one versus the previous one? Because the previous one was like, hey, we got married, we're on our honeymoon, we're implying stuff but not actually showing it you because whatever. And now I'm
Because it's a
pregnant, we're dealing,
PG-13
yeah,
movie.
and now I'm pregnant and we're dealing with it, but there's no real, like, nothing's actually happening. It's just, I just want to know more action than that. Okay, good.
I'm giving it a qualified yes.
All right, cool.
You and I will have to talk about
I'll go
it
see it. I'll go
once you
see it.
see it,
All right.
because I need somebody to talk to about it, because
Don't worry.
obviously.
I don't know when we'll see it, but we will.
Okay, good. Get
So,
back
we're
to me.
not even a movie review podcast. We're
Yes,
just. The
this is
crazy part is we have
awesome.
a ton of stuff to talk about, too, and
I
we
know.
just.
Let's get into it, man. What's going on in the world?
All right. First, a couple PSAs, I suppose.
Okay.
The first one. Do you know what percentage of space is currently being used up in your Gmail account?
Not off the top of my head. I can look real quick,
Mine
though.
was 45%, and
Whoa!
now it is down to 39%.
Whoa.
Yeah,
Right.
what's yours at?
Mine is, I'm 21% full. I'm using 2.1 of
Okay.
10.
Well,
What's
if.
your total, though? What's your total capacity?
Oh, I don't
Oh,
know.
man.
Okay, gmail.com. Hold up. Bop, bop, bop. Oh no, you're freezing because I did more than one thing on my computer. It is 10.1. What was yours?
Oh, mine's 10.12. That's probably
Ten
the
point
case for
one
everybody.
two? Dang.
No. What up? Okay, tell me how to tell me what you're doing. Tell me.
Okay. All right. So here's what you're gonna do. Go into your little
Yeah.
search box thing,
Okay.
and search for do size colon. And then do, let's go the number one, and then you're going to add a bunch of zeros. You're going to add one, two, three, four, five, six, seven zeros.
Okay.
Search it for it. This list now shows you all emails that have attachments larger than 10 megabytes.
Nice. No messages.
All right, then. Take off a
Gonna slowly
zero.
delete. Yeah.
Take off a zero and put a five instead. So now you're looking at 5 megabytes.
Nothing. How many megabytes? How many?
You doing this right?
One,
So
two,
it's
three,
size
four.
colon.
Yeah. Space.
No space.
Oh, whoa. Okay, when you delete the space, that changes everything. Oh, look at that. Oh, somebody emailed me an audio clip this week, and that's on the top of my list at
Yeah, that one
over
was
10.
not small. But anyway, so now if you go back and you do replace the 5 with the 10, so you can see the 10 megabytes. So what's cool about this is you can go through and see where your big space hogs are. Kind of neat.
Check that out. Check that out. That is very neat.
Man. So there's a cool little search tip for you. I like it. So it's just size colon, no space, then it's in bytes, I guess. So there you go. Okay,
Yeah.
another PSA for those of you Mac users out there. Let's just say theoretically that the Christmas season is coming and you want to be prepared for watching Christmas movies, but you don't want to watch the movies, you want to watch them on your computer digitally. Hanging with me? So, for example, my wife loves the movie Elf. She thinks it's hilarious, which it is pretty funny.
How can you argue with that?
Exactly. And but we have the DVD, but it's annoying to have to stick the DVD inside the computer. So, rip the DVD is the answer. And right now you can do it for free because in our page, when you go to it, you'll click on it. There will be a deal to get a free Mac X DVD Ripper Pro. They're
Nice.
giving it away through the end of November, so you have a little bit of time. No rush.
This is for Mac users?
For Mac users.
Oh.
But it's cool because you get a they give you a free license, you can download it. You can't upgrade it in the future. And they do provide regular
You said
upgrades.
doo-doo.
I know.
Oh.
But anyways, it was cool. I downloaded it. I've used an older version multiple times and it works pretty well. And so you can rip movies and then watch
Cool.
them in iTunes or, which it'll be iTunes if you're on a Mac. But yeah, there you go. It's free. Pull up the
Nice.
link. Yeah,
All right.
I like their name. It's technically their Mac X DVD Ripper, but their
Yeah.
what they call themselves on the side is Mac the Ripper. Love it.
Nice.
Yeah.
So this week has been an interesting week for Microsoft and Microsoft, or the head of Microsoft, CEO Ballmer, gave some discouraging news on Monday that would be resonated later in the week. So I'm just going to do what Ballmer did, which was kind of imply that things aren't happening as well, and then we'll get into it later in the show when we come back around to it. He dropped off a little bit of a teaser, so I'm dropping off a little bit of the teaser.
Fair enough.
Over at AT&T, the CEO Randall Stephenson, Steve Ste Stephenson, Randall said he's losing sleep over text messaging and iMessages is one of the chief problems in his life right now. Basically, this week or this last quarter, AT&T has seen for the first time a decrease in the number of not a decrease, but a slight decrease. It's like a super. It's a super small number. I think it's a. It's either a failure to increase at the expected rate, or oh shoot, I should have looked this up. Shoot.
Let's see if I can help you out here.
Basically, what's going on? Text messages decline in Q3 thanks to iMessages and other internet services. So basically, what's going on is for the first time in ever, text messages are declining. And the problem is that all external information is showing that micro messaging via words, texts of some sort, are not declining. They're growing like gangbusters. People are doing it more than you could possibly imagine, and it's more and more and more and more and more people are getting into it. And thankfully, more and more people seem to take into account, grammar and spelling, which is kind of weird, twist of everybody thought grammar was going to go the way of the birds, 1984-ish, because we're all like, TLT, TLT, that's not even a TDOI, all that your stuff. But that's all going away. It's crazy. But that's besides the point. What the point is basically things like iMessage, which use carry on the backbone of it's basically an IM service like Facebook Instant Messenger or Google Instant Messenger or whatever. All those different instant messaging services, people are using those because of their cross-platform coolness and their ability to send actual smiley faces and stuff and do more dynamic things. People who have them, and smartphones are growing at such a rate that they're really starting to take off, and it's actually affecting the number of text messages, which is something that as soon as it was announced, Furlough Bros was first to predict this, and then other people listened to us and started to resonate the obvious truth of what we were saying. But the idea that, you know, these messaging services are going to actually replace text messages, and it's going to affect the telecoms in a big way. And so I guess so this dude, Randall Stevenson, was saying that, yeah, he's actually losing sleep over this. This is because it's cutting into the revenue pretty bad, and it's freaking him out because they don't know what to do.
So bad for him.
I know, it's terrible. Well, and the obvious answer of what they're going to do is they're going to raise data rates, and they're going to, you know, and
yeah, why is he losing sleep? They've already started the transition. Unlimited text, unlimited phone calls, data buckets.
It just happens so fast. I think that they, like, you know, they people, it's kind of like the gas stations. You can't, you know, you can't raise it too fast or people freak out. Mm. And actually, the gas station, they'll have to do what the gas stations do, which is blow the prices up to an unbelievable level, get everybody screaming at the top of their lungs, then go, wait, we're just kidding. We'll lower it back down. And they just don't lower it as much as they raised it. Now your prices are higher, but people feel better about it, which, you know, gas stations do it all the time. That's what these guys are going to do with your data. But it's, you know, it's an interesting trend, and it's definitely something that, you know, it's obvious, but it's, you know, but it's also interesting. It's interesting how fast it happened, I guess, is what it, you know. I think everybody expected it. It's just, you know, iMessages has been out for a year-ish, just over a year, you know, and Facebook messaging on, you know, dedicated Facebook messenger on your iPhone hasn't been out that long. You know, it's been like a year, and it's already really, you know, changing the landscape, which I think is what freaks them out. But
is there an app you use on your phone other than the standard text messages?
No, actually. So on my Microsoft or my Nokia Lumia 920 with Windows Phone 8, no, it's just a standard text messaging thing.
Okay.
That's right. I totally forgot. I got to give my final review on it. And
there it is.
The shine is. You know what? I'm just gonna do. Okay, this is so done talking about text messages. The shine is totally worn off on the phone. Last week I was talking about like how good it looks. There's a couple little things that you know apps aren't totally stable, but whatever, they'll fix that. And you know, like that totally, you know, but I got lulled into. What I get lulled into every once in a while, where you see a video game and the graphics are phenomenal, and you're like, I gotta buy this game because the graphics are phenomenal. And then you play the game for 10 minutes and you realize, well, you know, the game stinks. It's a bad game, but it looks beautiful. And but for me, like, I forget what the game looks like so quickly that. You know, to me, it's like, that's
hedonic adaptation sets in.
Exactly. And you know, what they you know, this thing, yeah, it looks great. It looks nice, but it's like, it's stupid stuff. Like, okay, I'll give you an example. You go into your text messages, you start typing out your text, and you realize, oh, wait, what's the name of that thing that I, you know, what's the name of the restaurant? You flip to the Internet Explorer, which, ugh. You open up Internet Explorer and you know, you go, okay, what's this restaurant? You get the name of the restaurant, you copy the name of the restaurant, you flip back to your text messages. And instead of the partially written text message being left there, it's gone. It's been deleted. It just doesn't hold on to it. And so you have to retype your text message and then paste it in there. And you just, like, you know, it's when you, oh, and this is the other beautiful one. Let's say you're like, okay, I'm on Reddit. Oh, look at this link. Cool. Oh, that leads me to another link. Oh, that leads me to another link. You know, usually you just hit the back button and you go back to the main page. Okay, cool. That's what we do. Well, let's say I'm on this last page, and all of a sudden I get a text message. So I go to the text messages, and did I tell this about this last week?
I think so, but it's just fun, so keep going.
Oh, yeah. So, jeez. And so you open up you look at your text message, you respond, and you go back to the web browser, and you're like, okay, now I got to get back to the front page. So you hit the back button, but it's a universal back button for the entire phone. So instead of giving you back a page, it brings you back to the text messages. I don't want to go back to the text messages.
You just gotta hit back a few times.
No. It doesn't. It forgets the history of the web page, so you can't actually go back anymore.
Wait, so how do you go back on a web page?
If you're in app, like let's say
if you never leave the app page,
and you don't leave it, it will the universal back button will take you back a page.
Interesting.
But if you leave the app and come back, now it thinks, oh, okay, now the universal back is back to whatever app you were on just a second ago. Oh my gosh, it drives me absolutely nuts. There's no, like, you know, on Apple's got a really nice way for, like, dealing with, let's say you're playing a video game and you want, a song comes on and you're like, I'm not in the mood for this song. You double tap your home screen, it comes up, you flip over, you change your song, and then you hit the button, you're back in game. Yeah, there's no sort of no music control like that on Windows Phone 8. You have to leave the app, go to your music, do whatever you're going to do in your music, and then go back to what you're doing in your game. There's no quick little there's nothing.
So it's not great at multitasking, is that what I'm hearing you say?
Oh, it's terrible at it. There's no universal notification center. So if you clear a notification on accident and you don't know what it was notifying you on, there's no way to find it. It's gone. Sorry.
It's gone. You've been notified.
Yeah.
Mission congratulations.
You know, there's oh my gosh, it's just such, there's so many things like that where it's like, you know, just how did you guys get to the point where you did this and didn't realize you were going to have to.
Well, that'll be in a software update. In a year or two.
Yeah, exactly. And to me, it's just, you know, I come back and I go, you know, if it's what you really want, okay, I guess. You know, it's not.
Yeah, so who would you say the phone is for?
I don't know.
Who's the ideal customer? You can't say nobody. Come on. They had to have somebody in mind.
I think what their ideal customer was people who buy iPhones. The consumer is just, it's
why
a consumer
not,
grade phone,
just buy
high end
phone.
Consumer. It's a high end consumer phone, smartphone. It's they're trying to compete for the same market as Apple. They're not going for a different market because, you know, Android at least has got the whole we're open. Anybody you can do whatever you want. You could totally customize everything. They don't have that sort of customization on Windows Phone 8, which doesn't bother me. But that's an Apple thing. You know, that's what Apple does. You don't. You know, you got a few things that you can customize, and outside of that, you don't get to play with it. And Windows does the same thing. They just do it terribly. You know, and the whole thing with like. With Android is and I'm sure I'll get a, you know, swift introduction to this because I'll probably go on Tuesday or Wednesday and get a Samsung 3GS. And
can you buy the Nexus 4 at AT&T?
No, and they're like only. And they're crazy sold out. So I won't. If I end up going with Android long term, I will get the Nexus 4, but. I'll learn it on the. I'm gonna have to give Samsung the benefit of the doubt when it comes to playing with that phone.
Okay.
What was I gonna say? Oh my gosh! And it's one of those.
So you're not keeping the phone.
Like, oh, definitely not. And
how's the battery life? Was it okay?
Battery life's good. Battery life's pretty good. Okay. I don't have any. Well. I don't know. It ran out of batteries. It's not fantastic. It's nothing, you know, it's nothing really. It's not impressive by any means. And I Netflixed it up today because I was not feeling fantastic this morning. For whatever reason. I don't know what was going on last night.
Ache of the head.
Exactly. Yeah. I was like Netflixing it up, and I got like four episodes in I started watching the Full Metal Alchemist, but they're like 20-minute episodes, and it was completely dead. Now, granted, I didn't charge it over the evening, but it's not like I used it yesterday. Wasn't surfing online. I don't know. I just I'm you know, it's the whole it's I'm not impressed. It's
so
it's
I was I was
the only
thing,
yeah.
Go ahead.
The only thing it's got going for it, really and truly, is the screen is very nice because of how big it is, and it feels cool, but it's really heavy. No girls – every girl that picks it up goes, it's huge. My thumbs can't reach it. And It's just this.
Wow, you got a rough life there. A bunch of girls hanging around you, picking up your phone. I feel
I
for
know.
you, man. Really feel for you.
Yeah.
Of course, they all sound a little dainty, but that's whatever.
That's just my. That's how I hear women, but.
That's how I was reading an article. It was on Friday, and I
Yeah.
believe it was Microsoft is basically begging developers not to make WebKit the new IE6 for mobile devices,
Yeah.
because as you know, there are some predominant smartphones out there, and they all use WebKit for their browser.
Yeah.
And so as a
So do
result,
all major browsers out there, except freaking Microsoft. Yeah.
So as a result, developers are developing specifically for WebKit, and also more specifically, they start out with the iPhone or iPad, and then they tweak it to work for Android. And
Yeah.
they're not even testing it on that. And so Microsoft is like, "Come on, guys! IE10 is actually more standards compliant than WebKit. Stop being like doing special code just like you used to do for us with IE6." Just seems
Right.
awesome to hear Microsoft
Well,
complaining about that.
yeah,
Where's
it
it?
really
It's
does.
oh,
That
what's the quote? Fate, it seems, is not without a sense of irony.
Right, exactly. It's just and what's I mean, they make an interesting argument, which is we are standards compliant, and the internet really only works as long as everybody sticks to the same standard. As soon as people start bridging out there, and if something takes over, then how are we gonna, stand? And they're doing things that are
Well,
not standard. But
and
the problem
yeah,
is
well,
that
it's
the
like the standards committee is so slow on some of that stuff. It's like they don't have any or very little for touch rules. So
Right.
Apple's just like, well, we want touch to work, so we're making it up.
Excuse me.
And when they adopt it, we'll see.
Right, and it's a symbiotic. The big thing is it's a symbiotic relationship between the two. It's the standards group and the rest of the world work together. And the thing was, in the brilliance of Apple, what they did with WebKit when they built the WebKit was this idea that they needed to build and they need the basic. There was no HTML5 standard. It didn't do every. I mean, there was almost nothing. So they built WebKit as a sort of preemptive standard, and then they released it to everybody to use. And for those of you who don't know what WebKit is it's basically the source code for the rendering engine on how websites are rendered, how they actually understand HTML and Cassidy your style sheets. And what it does is it's what you type out all your code, all your text, and it becomes cool pictures and how that's all laid out and how all that interacts. And then the thing is that, eventually Apple gave up that as they're running that and Google took it over, and
Yeah, so
everybody
it
else.
powers Safari and Chrome.
And Firefox
Does
and
Firefox use it? I thought they had their own special one, but
I,
maybe
you
not.
know, I they have a I think they have a modified version of the WebKit, I believe. I know Opera does. Yeah. Okay, you're right. It doesn't. I know Opera uses WebKit, but man, Firefox uses they use they have their own implementations, and it's really closely related to WebKit. It's based off of WebKit. IE6 is the or IE10 is the only one that like doesn't pay attention to these other technologies, and
But it's
there
more
are
standards compliance than theirs are, which I think
right and.
actually in this situation means it has less features.
That's exactly what it means, and it also the problem with IE, you take it one step further, is it's like Safari and Google and Chrome have vicious JavaScript engines. I mean, those things are so powerful, it's not even funny. They work so great, it's crazy. And Internet Explorer has one of the worst. It's like, because you guys, I get what they're saying, and there is something to be said about, the industry as a whole sitting down and saying, look, we
Jeez.
need to make sure that these things are standard compliant. But the problem is that they're whining because people aren't developing for them. They're trying to make an argument that doesn't make any sense. In that instead of getting up to speed and trying to say, hey, before we all go on these different paths, let's make a new benchmark of where we are, you know, and the standards committees can do that, but they need to be told what the developers want them to do. And whatever, that's so frustrating. They're just, ugh. And it shows on the phones. I mean, it really does.
Yeah. That's why Microsoft is whining, because they get someone like you where you go, the browser doesn't work, don't buy it. I mean, it's a total chicken and the egg deal, and they're attempting to go after one of those. You know, they're trying to stop the chicken or whatever.
Well, the thing is all they'd have to do is all they'd have to do is get. They don't even have to adopt WebKit. They just have to build their own WebKit clone, and they wouldn't have any problems. But they don't want to.
Right.
They refuse to. They think they have a better plan. What they want is they want to control the standard like they did with IE6, because that was very lucrative for them. It locked people into using their browsers and their technologies, and it made them the predominant web browser for almost 10 years. And now they've lost that title, and now they're upset about the fact that, wait a second, you mean we got to do what other people are doing? You know, it's so transparent politically, and they make this like semi-good argument, but if it were the other way around, they would have absolutely no respect for. Well, we know this, that they have no respect for web standards, and so it makes it difficult for me to say, yeah, I want them being the champion of web standards, because we know how well they take it. Whereas Apple, they said there's not enough web standards, so we're going to build an open source kit for everybody to use, and we'll make that the new standard. That's how those things, sorts of standards are supposed to happen. When you know, in that, when you fill the vacuum, you're not supposed to make your own proprietary stuff and make it so that everybody else has to, you know, be frustrated. Let's move on. I'm obviously riled up.
Okay. Yes.
HTC, this kind of a cool one. HTC made a settlement with Apple, so obviously HTC is getting their pants sued off because they make Android phones and they stole junk from Apple. And some would say they didn't steal it. Some would say they borrowed it. Some would say that you can't steal that sort of a thing. Well, evidently HTC said, nah, we stole it. because they came to a nice little settlement, and every single HTC phone bought and sold, $8 of that transaction ends up in Apple's hands.
Wow.
And from here on out. And the thought is that this will be the new archetype for future settlements with Apple and how the phone companies deal with it, which was the point all along. I mean, generally speaking, you know, how you want this to happen is you want companies to go into a situation where they work out their licensing agreements beforehand. It doesn't happen. Oftentimes it doesn't happen. But the whole point of the licensing is that you get paid for the work you've done, even if somebody else is using it. And not usually what Apple was doing. That was a little bit different, where they were, you know, really trying to stop anybody from doing anything even similar. And so this is really, I don't know, I think people were whining about how this is terrible because nobody should be paying anything for it. But I sit there and I go, Apple got the patents. A bunch of lawyers agreed on it. HTC has agreed on it at this point. Like, what are you supposed to say? No, this is some sort of a moral absurdity, because, you know, anybody would give any sort of money to anybody over technology owned. And the nice part about it is, you know, now that this is kind of going to help people figure out what they need to do, is it's like a company that wants to develop a phone and they're a small company, they can say, look, we'll make the phones, we'll sell the phones, and we know that when we sell them, we need to overcharge by $10 and just put that $10 in a little piggy bank, because when finally Apple gets around to suing us, if we have any success, we know it's going to cost about $10 a phone.
We'll give $8 to Apple, give a couple dollars to Microsoft, it'll all be good.
Right, exactly. Which is the whole point of those sorts of, you know, licensing deal archetypes. But Samsung, of course, is like, we're not going to pay a single cent ever because, I think in the end, Samsung's going to give money. They're going to cut a licensing deal like that with Apple. Apple's going to cut a licensing deal with Samsung for the same technology Samsung has. And they're all going to work out this weird web of licensing deals that has always existed in the tech industry. And you know, everybody's going to make a little bit of money off everybody else for the work that they did. They developed something, they built it, they designed it. Somebody, you know, people deserve money for that. That they don't get to, they don't do that work for free. But you know, and I'm just, you know, I'm glad it didn't come to a big court case, because those are usually pretty nasty.
Makes sense. So there is one player who's kind of been left out of all of these discussions we've been having.
Yeah, who's
But
that?
come January 30th,
Oh, baby.
making a big comeback. Thorsten Hines. He is the chief executive of our favorite company,
Is he
Research in
related
Motion.
to Teresa
Probably not.
of Heinz Ketchup?
Probably not. I don't know. So anyways, he was talking to employees, developers, and customers, and telling them that the BlackBerry 10, it's a new phone, you know, it's a
It's gonna
big
be
bet for
awesome.
him, yeah, and if it catches on, he's gonna have saved the company. Woohoo! But I love this. He says, in a meeting in New York, in a meeting with the New York Times editors and reporters, he expressed his confidence. Ready for this one? Here's his line. I don't expect things to get much worse.
Now it's an interesting question of, now is he talking about, I don't expect our level to get much worse, or I don't expect our t trajectory to get much worse? Because, you know, if you can stay at your level and maybe turn around your trajectory, that's bad. It's a bad place to be, but it's optimistic, which I think is what he meant. But I think everybody took that as like, we don't expect our trajectory to get much worse. That's a bad thing. That's really a bad thing. That doesn't help you at all.
We've been losing really badly, and I think we'll lose less badly. You know, I don't know what he means by that, but just the fact that that's the basis for his confidence, I don't think it can make it much worse. Just
You
like,
know,
hey,
that's
at least he's
optimistic.
admitting that it's bad, right? That's a start.
Hey, you know, and sometimes, yeah, and sometimes you need to do that. Now, my question will be, is it going to be, you know, Windows Phone 8-esque, where, you know, you miss obvious things like, you know, simple controls that every other device is able to implement relatively flawlessly, and, you
Well,
know,
so here's what's interesting about this
yeah.
is the hardware actually doesn't have a home button. Okay. And what he's saying is it says because it's better integrated. He goes, a home button is needed on iPhones and phones using Google's Android operating system because those operating systems require users to switch repeatedly between applications to perform different tasks. In contrast, BlackBerry 10 will consolidate bits of information and capabilities that are distributed through separate apps on current smartphones. For example, BlackBerry 10's messaging center can display Facebook updates, LinkedIn messages, texts, and Twitter posts along with emails. That is an information-dense stream right there. So in turn, BlackBerry 10 users will be able to use that hub to
That's the
reply to
whole.
Facebook messages without opening their phone's Facebook app.
Okay. I get that. I get that. I see what they're saying, and I'll tell you what. That is one cool thing that the Windows Phone 8, they do some things well. So the whole live tile th idea, right, is we'll have all of your information, so you don't have to switch between apps. You just look at the tile, and it's got your weather, it's got your, you know, it's got your calendar, it's got your whatever. Well, and yeah, they have one of those, and it's, I set it, I mean, I got crazy. I set up every single new streaming thing into it, so I could, you know, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. I got all of my information, just loads of it. And man, it is, you know, it's kind of cool to have it all there. You can push buttons, you know, change things, whatever. Yeah, I still find myself using Twitter and Facebook apps all the time because those have little different functionalities that they do just a little bit better. And the whole point of the app system, the whole point of the reason why Apple opened it up to third-party apps, and the brilliance of it was the whole reason why computers run third-party applications is because when you have a crowdsource system, when you have tons of people developing tons of different things for specific tasks, they're going to get really good at what they do. You know, it's a marketplace of ideas. They're going to get really good at what they do. They're going to have little functionalities, little changes that make it better. That, you know, it's like, you know, Facebook, not to mention the fact that sometimes I go to Facebook because I have certain types of friends there. Twitter, that's got I don't really follow my friends so much on Twitter as I follow like companies and
yeah.
The radio shows I like, and you know, and I got an entirely different, you know, way to of how I organize my friends in Instagram. And so you sit there and you go, it's like each different one has its different function. They have their different group based on what they do well. You put all that together, that doesn't actually make it any better or any easier to get through, and it certainly doesn't make me any less likely to use the dedicated app.
Well,
it's just crazy that these guys are like...
Yeah, and what I want to know is, I mean, clearly you can still install apps on the BlackBerry 10. It's not like those are gone. But is it does that mean the developer has to do some sort of integration into these hub things as well? Or are they dependent on BlackBerry including those options? And, you know, I just don't know. And I don't know. I feel like because of that, well, not because of that, but that is just one more reason why developers will do them last.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It's,
but yeah, I mean, they're going after a business segment, and they're saying what you really care about are, because I thought this was weird, you care about business stuff. Because one of the things they said was, oh, the BlackBerry 10 address book can display all recent emails from any contact and even pull news stories and other information related to his or her company from the web. So it's not saying we're going to pull in their latest status update, which would be cool. Instead, they're going to pull in news articles related to their company, which for me, that would be very interesting because you have like a bazillion HP things that mean absolutely are meaningless to my job. But, you know, whatever. They're about HP, I guess. But the point is, like, I mean, I think maybe the bet they're going after is they're saying we're going after business people. And so they don't care. I mean, as long as you get the big social networks, they don't care about Angry Birds and other cool, fun apps. They don't care about that because they're business people.
That's not the bet. That's their desperate hope. Because
unlike what you said with the Nokia Lumia, they have clearly defined who that phone is for, and it's for the serious business guy. And I've got to imagine that what they like, if they had to pick a title, it's a stockbroker. They go, this is a guy who, and maybe I don't know, that might even be a bad one. It's like an executive, I think, someone who's just like busy with work all the time. That's what they do. They have no personal life. That's like, that's their vision. The person who, when they have free time, they're catching up on email.
And the concept that somehow phones that do everything don't do that very well is crazy to me. The idea that the iPhone isn't good for, you know, your busy, super productive CEO, or your Android phone can't be adapted to be fantastic for your particular business model, and you only do that all the time, that somehow that idea that there's an open market there just seems crazy. I think what this is, honestly, I think it's they don't have the time to develop all of these different tools, and they
don't
have
all those apps are there. I don't understand.
It's like a home button. How do we differentiate ourselves so that we look different? So they're just making these arbitrary differentiations that don't actually make any sense. They're, you know, it's like Sony making the argument that no, we don't care about iPod Touch sales because the PlayStation, the PSP, you know, the iPhone isn't a game device. People, you know, people aren't going to buy an iPod Touch instead of a PSP. And what did people do in mass? They bought tons and tons of iPod Touches instead of PSPs. And it's just like crushed that entire segment. You shrug your shoulders. You're like, what the heck is going on, guys? What do you think
is
happening?
So now here's the other interesting thing that they're doing. I mean, and maybe I even said it wrong, that they're like their user, perhaps, is that busy executive. But their customer, the people they will be selling to, are going to be information technology officer or departments.
Yeah.
Because one of the things they're doing is what did they say here? He said in this interview that they believe that only about half of companies allowed employees to choose their own smartphones, and so they're going, okay, we're going after that other half who doesn't. And he's saying that some companies might return to selecting their employees' phones to reduce technology support costs, which maybe I could see that. So one of the other features that BlackBerry 10 has, which I actually think is actually kind of cool, it allows corporations to segregate out corporate data and apps from a user's personal materials. So when you stop working for them, they can nuke all of your company's data, like emails and contacts and stuff like that. But they don't delete any of your personal stuff, like photos. So I was like, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, wait a second.
They have two separate phones.
Wait a second. Okay, when you do things like, okay, when I worked for
But I'm kind of like, so is it a company phone or is it a personal phone? I don't understand.
Right. Well, number one, that's a good question. Number two, the other thing is like, if you're a good IT person, let's say you keep all of your information on Exchange Server, all your text messages, all your emails and contact information and stuff like that. It's all on an Exchange Server. They hand you their personal phone, what you do is you go in and you go to the Exchange Server thing, and it puts all that information into the phone, and then you just turn that account off and it all goes away unless they copy and pasted it, in which case, what is Google or what is BlackBerry doing? How is that any different? It's like they're finding all these solutions for problems that don't exist. It doesn't make any sense to me what their strategy is. And the more I hear about it, the more I just go, I can't believe this is actually happening. I can't believe they're doing this. You know, and I get the fact that, like, you can't, you know, the ship is sinking, and I think a lot of people at BlackBerry know it, but it's still paying their, you know, it's still paying their mortgage down, so we're going to stick with it. And you can't be like, you know, your CEO can't come out and be like, look, guys, this is awful. It doesn't work. It's got huge holes in the operating system. It's not stable. But don't worry. We'll have that all fixed in a couple of months. No, you can't say that. You talk about – you figure out how to sell what you have, even though what you have is pretty disappointing.
So here's the end of it, the end of this interview, or at least the write-up, which you sit here and you go, how do I want to say this? Tell me if this sounds familiar. Let me put it that way. Yeah. And then let's talk about the likelihood of Rim doing it versus somebody else. despite the dismal failure of the BlackBerry Playbook tablet computer, Mr. Hines has grand ambitions for BlackBerry 10 phones in the corporate workplace. He said that RIM is pitching the new phone to corporations as a, wait for it, replacement for desktop and laptop computers in offices over time. Just remember that word, over time. He sketched out a situation in which BlackBerry 10 phones will act as building passes for employees who, once at their desks, will connect their BlackBerries to keyboards and displays. Whenever you enter an office, you don't have your laptop with you. You have your mobile computer power exactly here. And he, Mr. Hines said, patting a BlackBerry 10 phone sitting in a holster on his hip. You will not carry a laptop within 3 to 5 years. Boom! So, does that sound familiar? And what are the chances of BlackBerry being the ones to pull off that future?
I'm actually a little bit stunned here. I can't believe he had the tenacity, the courage.
Yes.
I'll be a little bit frank here. The balls to say that. I can't believe that he. I mean, yeah. That's what everybody wants. Everybody is trying to do that. Everybody's paying billions and billions of. That's what the industry is all about right now. Killing the desktop and the laptop and replacing it with your phone. That's what that. That's what Windows 8 is. It's a transition between the desktop and the mobile platform. Ideally, Windows Phone.
No. But you open up your office buildings with your phone.
I know.
You get to do that too.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, with
your
near
field
communication.
You go like this. Beep. It's amazing. Oh yeah, PES. Let's include in this vision, if we will. But I guess that's a consumer vision. Is I want to not only I want to not open up my office building. I want to open my home and my car and sure my office building. I also want to pay bills and heck, I want to start my car with my phone. I want to open up my garage door with my phone. Yeah, I don't even want a phone. I want an implant. Let's just do that. Voice spoken. I go, computer, start the car. And Siri says,
guess what?
Starting your car.
Between near field communication, Wi-Fi, and Bluetooth, every phone on the market can do all of those things if you have the infrastructure that communicates with them. There are no phones out there that can't do that.
So are what there, the like, are there, about? So this is a legitimate question. I don't understand this one, or I don't know the answer to this one. Are there displays out there that can, like, connect to your phone via, like, Bluetooth or something? That I could...
Yeah, there are. There are?
That's well, cool. I want one.
They're called... Well,
and I'm not talking about Bluetooth. AirPlay, you know? I mean, like I want to be able to...
No.
Because I know that I can connect a keyboard to my phone via Bluetooth. I've never done it, but I know that you can do it.
So...
And...
Right now, as far as I understand... So Bluetooth doesn't have the bandwidth to be able to do that. Bluetooth can't drive a display. There's a new movement in the display market though to include Wi-Fi chips into them. James is holding up his 32-pin connector. There's a move to have Wi-Fi. There's a move to build Wi-Fi antennas into monitors and then be able to connect via Wi-Fi. There's enough bandwidth there for local internet connections where you can actually connect devices directly. My computer has some – I took the sticker off. I don't remember what it's called. It's like Wime – it's like Wi-Fi TV or something crazy. I don't know.
WiMAX?
But if you own a TV – what is might that? Be. WiMAX is something different. But if you have a TV that has that built into it, you can just connect your monitor via that. There's no device that I know of right now that there's not a lot. There's probably an Android phone out there that can connect via Wi-Fi already to monitors if it's, you know, if you're connected right. But yeah, right. The big movement right now, though, if you're talking about extending,
well, that'd be
cool.
Even
you
put it into a dock connector. Yeah, well, right. You put it into a dock. It charges your phone. It connects to the keyboard and the monitor and mouse or touchpad.
Right, exactly. You know, and it's just like, well, and Google has one of those. They like not Google. I can't remember. I think it was Samsung. Somebody made like it's basically a laptop. It's a keyboard and monitor, and you plug your Android phone in the back of it, and it runs the Android on the big screen. It's a full-blown computer.
You okay there?
You know, and it's like, yeah, I'm okay. I have like reverse hiccups, which everybody's like, what is that? I was like, hiccup in, and it's weird. I realize that, but I am okay. So I sit here and I go like, there are tons of people out there that are already making computer phone hybrids.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, congratulations, BlackBerry, on catching up with, you know, 2011. Nice. That's awesome, guys. I'm glad that the vision that people set
2011,
out.
2011, please.
Yeah, I'm glad that the vision that people set out. Yeah. Honestly, you sit there and you go, what do you think people have been trying to do for the last 20 years with computer technology? I mean, really. You know, like pretty much ever since Steve Wozniak said, hey, you know what we could do? We could make a server-size computer and turn it into a personal computer. Ever since then, the entire industry has been trying to make a
computer
that
you can
carry around.
Uses a keyboard, a typewriter, and a
right.
television monitor for the screen. Amazing.
Right. And the whole idea that you
can
carry around this... I know, yeah. The whole idea that you can carry around your computer in your pocket, it's just like, yeah. Thanks, Rim, for the visionary, thoughts. Good lord. I wonder why that company's collapsing. I can't figure it out.
Well.
You know what I think the best part about it is? I think right now the hedge fund managers are like, they're basically pushing the idea that, no, BlackBerry 10 is going to be awesome. it's going to be the best thing ever, so that they can buy a bunch of short stocks, and when the stock collapses after it releases in January, they're all going to make crazy money because they really want to bolster the stock ahead of that release. I think that's what everybody's like aiming for, because the expectation is this is going to launch and people are going to be like, really? Really, you know, sales for it are going to be awful. I can't wait.
Here's they're launching it January 30th, which I think the only worst date could be like December 26th. No, that actually would be that bad, because then a bunch of people do sales. I mean, it would literally be like January 1st, where all of, you know, the post-Christmas shopping is done.
Yeah.
And everyone has their phones and are happy with them. I mean, they just I don't know. The only people that are going to hit are the ones who are literally coming off a contract, or no, they're not going for consumers. I got to quit thinking that. That's not what they're thinking. They're thinking it's a new fiscal year for companies. We're going to start selling them these BlackBerries. That's their whole thought. That's what they're thinking is. And they don't care about the consumers, which is why we don't get it. And
no, you see, the problem is the problem I will come back to is, you know, every argument I've made has been, I still think that they've totally missed the business market too. They're fixing problem. They're trying to fix problems that don't exist. They're trying to pretend like there are problems to differentiate themselves, when the fact is that they're not doing anything that other people don't already have a good working solution for. And, you know, I sit there and I go, you know, if you're not going to do anything new, why do you expect anybody? The only people that are going to buy BlackBerry 10 devices are people that were going to buy current BlackBerry devices, because they buy BlackBerry devices. Those are the only people. And
yeah, but the best part is this one that they're coming out with doesn't even have a dedicated keyboard. That's coming later.
Right. Are you serious? Seriously? They don't even – they're like bread and – their war cry of nobody likes virtual keyboards that they've been like hollering ever since 2007. They're not even sticking with that. They're going to do a virtual keyboard at first.
Yeah. It's just a rectangular slab. Looks like all the other smartphones already on the market without the home button.
They are so stupid. I can't believe it. Oh, I've not heard one thing out of BlackBerry that makes me think, you know, that's a really novel solution. I get
they
that.
Got a chance. Well, maybe you should wait. Keep going with your phone experiment until January 30th. That way, that way you can give it a full review.
No, I don't. Dude, a company won't be around that long.
I'm sad to say, I think my prediction is going to be wrong.
I know. It's not going to happen this year. I'm bummed.
Yeah. Just sad.
They're gonna make it.
Double down for next year, though.
I know. Man. Double or nothing, definitely 2013. Man. This is going to be spectacular. I'm so excited. I know. I feel bad for you, Canuckers.
It's okay.
But
so what's next?
So Steven Sinofsky changed Microsoft for the better or worse. Tell me about that. Who is Steven Sinofsky?
Sinofsky, I believe.
Sinofsky?
We'll call him Steve.
Skyfall?
Okay. He is...
That will make it confusing.
He's the guy who was in charge of Windows 8.
Nice.
But is no longer in charge of Windows 8.
Oh, is he in charge of Windows 9 now?
Nope. He's in charge of his own destiny now.
Ooh, that's nice.
Yeah.
He and what's his name? The dude from Apple. Oh, shoot.
Forrestal.
Yeah, it's Scott Forrestal. They're going to go and start their own company.
He left for personal reasons. Undisclosed. Yeah.
Sinofsky did.
At Ballmer's request, I'm sure.
Exactly. Yeah, because they're right in the middle of a Windows 8 launch. I'm gonna leave. I don't think you guys need me anymore. Done.
Which I think plays into the whole sales have been tempered. line. From what I understand, the guy and he did change Microsoft for better and for worse. He was like in charge of Office for a while, and then after Windows Vista came out, which was spectacular,
Atrocious. Yeah.
not in a good way.
Yeah.
He was tapped to fix it because
Right.
he has some engineering chops. He actually worked with Bill Gates back in the days. And he has the ability to focus and say, no, this is what we're doing. We're paring down all the features that that won't make it happen on time. And he's great at sticking with a schedule.
Yeah.
Windows 7 and both Windows 8 launched exactly when they were supposed to.
Yeah,
And
and Vista famously was years late.
right, which he, like I said, he was not really a part of that. So he came in to fix it and really just kind of make it better. And so he did what he does. And the problem, though, is that if you get in his way of making it happen, it's not good. I don't
Yeah.
really know what that means, but it sounds like he's not a nice guy to you.
He came off as, they said the same thing about Scott Forstall. He's very divisive, and from what I read, one of the things that he notoriously does is that he really believes that, if something is if his product is dependent on something else, he believes he should control whatever that is. So, like, one of the reasons why Windows 8 has kind of become this omnipresent, Windows 8, Windows Phone 8, like there's all these styles are all tied together. The reason why that's happening was because of him. He was like, he wanted to take over all technology at Microsoft because if his
Well,
product was dependent on it, he was like, no, I gotta have control over that too, which
yeah, and some
did
of it
not make people
sounds like
happy.
he did Windows 7, which was, refine and make Windows Vista work.
Right. And he
And
did a great
then
job. I mean,
yeah, and then his thing was originally on Windows 8 was to refine and or extend and expand with Windows 8, but very much
right.
looked like Windows 7. But in the meantime, a little thing called the iPad started taking off, and it's still not clear exactly whose mandate it was to make Windows 8 what it is. But he was very much given a no, we need to have a response to the tablet thing.
Yeah.
And it just slowly, in my opinion, careened out of control on him, where he was like, okay, well, we got this Windows 7 thing going. Yeah, and we can try to, meet those needs there. And they saw some clear weaknesses with the iPad, a lack of multitasking, or you can only use one app at a time, let me put it that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
So they're like, we could try to do this better. And so they allowed you to do like see two apps at a time, which I think is cool, and you'll eventually actually see in the bigger iPad. And that's how you'll be able to differentiate between the iPad and the iPad mini instead of just size. And
Yeah.
because everything I've been reading too, they say like it's got enough horsepower now where like it's just sitting there. There's no apps that are taking advantage of it per se. So you could
Interesting.
do multiple apps at a time, you could do it. I don't know
Yeah.
what that would do on battery life, but you could do it. And so anyways, so they introduced some cool things, and but yeah, it just sounds like he was good at what he did, but he rubbed some feathers the wrong way. And I think ultimately when he didn't have blockbuster, or they didn't have blockbuster sales coming out. And if you're going to make enemies, you've got to be perfect.
Yeah.
Because my guess is, he made some enemies and it didn't come out perfect and they went for blood.
Right.
And I think that's sounds very much what happened. And either he was tired or Ballmer was tired, or you know what I mean? And they just went, now's a good time. But I very much doubt that it was like this has been 6 months in the making and he said, yeah, once it launches, I'm done.
Right.
It
I know
doesn't.
that's not the implication. The implication that I've gotten, and I agree with this read on it, which was things happened quickly after the launch, and It just
Which
became.
means Windows 9 is going to be different than.
Yeah, jeez, that's not going to be a problem for them.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Who knows? Maybe IE 11 will be fixed by then.
Who knows? Who knows is a great question. Who does know? Nobody.
Nobody. Yeah, it's interesting, for sure. So we'll see what Microsoft can do with that. He was a guy who he got it done for sure, and it's hard
And
to,
that,
I don't know.
to me, it's like, Windows 7 was a pretty big su success,
Yeah.
and I use Windows 7. I like Windows 7. It's got things that I sit there and I go, OS X doesn't have this. I wish it would. Especially like the stamp too. And there's just certain things that it does. I hated Vista. I like Windows 7. And I shrug my shoulders and I say, man, you got rid of the guy that made it work again. Windows 7 is the new XP. You sit there and go, it is the benchmark operating system, and he's got,
Yeah, but clearly he wasn't
whatever.
able to, or I see, I don't know if it was his fault or not, but for whatever reason, this tablet transition thing they're going through, which once again, this is probably a good time to mention it. Sales have been below internal projections even, and
Really?
yeah, and so yeah, it's been tough, and so some of the internal stuff that's going on. Is they're blaming PC makers for not making exciting PCs, which also interesting about that is that Todd Bradley, the PC executive for HP, oh, them fighting words, he came out and was like, "The Surface is no competition to us," which I'm like, well, sure, but
I think
basically
it's by
what,
definition competition, but
well.
I don't know
I think
if it's
I
real
think he's saying
competition.
it's no competition in the way that
Dell's
let
not
me
really
give
your
a
competition anymore.
yeah. It's kind of like we trounce all over them. So he goes, 'cause they were asking about it, and he goes, "I hardly call Surface competition. One, it's very limited distribution. It tends to be slow and a little kludgy as you use it. Plus, it's expensive." He goes, "Holistically, the press has made a bigger deal out of Surface than what the world has chosen to believe."
That's
Yes!
awesome.
That's the guy in charge of selling PCs for HP. That's kind of weird that he doesn't have nice things to say about a non-competing product.
Yeah, but the thing is that I think everybody who's picked up the tablet, and from everything I've read, they go, yeah, that's pretty accurate. The real question is, can HP make a better tablet for less? That's the that okay, what he says about Windows, about Surface is true, but can you do better than that? I don't know. And the answer is probably yes. Well, the
But
answer is it's gotta be, I don't know. Jeez.
yeah, it's interesting. So, I mean, it'll be, I don't know where Microsoft is going to go from here. I mean, they're going to sell PCs. That's what they do. You can't buy Windows 7 anymore. So, anytime someone buys a new PC, hey, guess what? You're on 8. And even though PC sales as overall are declining, and we could argue until we're blue in the face for why that's the case, but we all know it has to do with tablets. And, so they are going to sell them, and it eventually will make its way into the world. And some people will get used to them. But it'll just be interesting to see, what's it going to be, 3 years from now, right? Is when they should see Windows 9-ish.
And to me, I don't know. I shrug my shoulders and I say, that people will. I don't think Windows 8 is the Vista of Microsoft. I don't think it's nearly that bad. From my experience, from what my limited experience with it so far, and reviews I've read, It's a decent operating system. You just need hardware that actually works with it. You need a touchscreen. You need, capable RAM. You need enough RAM. You need enough hard drive. But if you do all those things, it's stable. You learn the navigation. It works well, and it's kind of nice. It's a change. It looks cool. There, it's not. It's still Windows
It
underneath it
sounds
all, and
like
it's.
if you approach it from the mindset of this is a desktop,
Yeah.
or this is a classic computer with a weird thing thrown on top,
Yeah.
and you just gotta learn how to use that weird thing. It sounds like that works pretty well. But
Right.
if you approach it from this is a tablet, and that's my primary use case, it sounds like it really breaks down on you.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I completely agree with that. And I think the movement towards giving it tablet-like capabilities as a, despite being a desktop, is actually a good thing. I think that adds something beneficial to the hardware. I don't think it's like it makes it worse. But at the same time, but it's interesting that sales are bad. That says something. It might have as much to do with the fact that that Google launched their Nexus 10, and Apple launched the iPad Mini. And the iPad Mini like has had the exact opposite response as everybody else, right? Where it's like everybody was excited about Windows 8, they actually got it, and they're like, oh, this is disappointing. Everybody was like, what the heck is this garbage Apple when it came to the iPad Mini? And it's selling gangbusters, and everybody's like, wow, this is way cooler than I thought it was gonna be, and that has something to do with it too. We said this, I really think that Apple wanted people to compare Apple to apples, as it were, and go from the Apple Store. They wanted people to do exactly what I did, which was go into the Apple Store, pick up the iPad Mini, and go, oh, this is nice, and then walk across the aisle, the hall, to the Windows Store and play with the Surface and go, yeah, there's a big difference there. They wanted that comparison. That's why they launched it when they did it, and it's hurting Microsoft. People are really doing what people are already doing what BlackBerry is going to try to do in the next couple of years, which is buy tablets and phones instead of PCs and make the transition from as Steve Jobs puts it, move from an agricultural economy where everybody drives trucks and big vehicles designed for work, and move towards a commuter economy where everybody drives smaller, less capable cars that are cooler and more fun and more diverse because they're not workhorses. And that's what people are doing. That's what people are doing for Christmas. That's what they're doing for everything. I don't know. I mean, it. I just, it's an interesting. I can, I am kind of surprised that it's not selling as it's not even meeting their internal estimates, though. That I wasn't expecting that. I gotta believe that that has something to do with Apple and Google purposefully trying to, that whole the tablet competition and them actually trying making sure that people compared.
Well, and I think what you're going to see here is some major, major, I mean, talking major, okay? Did I say that enough?
Yes.
Fire sales on Friday.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
that's how they're going to hit their numbers.
Yeah. They're gonna take an enormous
And that's when they
financial
will and
hit.
that's when they will tell everyone, "Oh my gosh, we sold like, 5 million whatevers, and it was amazing." And we didn't make any money on it. We actually lost a little bit, but we hit the sales numbers, and it was sweet. I mean, I know HP plays that game, and when things aren't going the way that it is, ooh man, Contra dollars come out,
Right. And
and
it's not a bad strategy. I mean, because part of the reason why people buy those devices is because there's a user base that people are developing for. You need to have a user base before people start to develop so that people can be interested in buying it. It's a completely new system. So yeah, I mean that that you I think they were I'll bet they were planning on doing that one way or another. They were probably thinking we're not going to make any money on you know, day after Thanksgiving, and now they're like, okay, we're ready to lose money. Let's really drive these prices down. Let's get crazy. You know, and because now it's, you know, now it's make or break time. It's mm-hmm. it's extraordinarily important that they have a strong user base come Q1. And it doesn't matter how much money they make or not, because it's going to set the tone for the next 3 years of the company. You know, it's like the PlayStation 3, you know, they've done a remarkable job surviving, but man, that was an ugly first couple of years for Sony because they stumbled out the gate and Microsoft can't afford to do that. You know?
So speaking of game systems, you going out and buying the Wii U? You already got one?
No.
Oh.
No.
All right.
I'm not. I'm totally not interested in it. It's weird.
From all the reviews that I've read, you would not get one yet. They've all said that it is lacking the game that gives you the reason to buy it.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, they're saying, like, I guess the new Mario game, they're like, it's fun, but it's, you know, it's not like...
It's not Wii Sports, it's not Halo, it's not,
yeah,
you know.
It's missing whatever that is in order to get it.
It's not surprising.
Cool. I don't have television, so I'm not going to buy one.
Man.
So...
I feel bad for Nintendo. I'm not looking forward to talking about Nintendo beginning of next year, because... I don't think it's going to be pretty, and I am, you know, a Nintendo.
They'll do well during the holidays. They always do.
I don't think they're going to do as well as they want to.
Well, I would agree with that, but they'll do.
I think it's going to be. I think coming into Q1 of 2013, I think it's going to look pretty ugly in retrospect.
Well, from what I understand too, is like from all the reviews that I read, none of them actually had access to all of the features because Nintendo wasn't done with them yet. They were trying to hit the shopping cycle, and right. So they shipped it early, and so it didn't have a lot of the apps and stuff. They were just like, in progress, doesn't work. And so like every single review, they're like, yeah, I'd love to tell you about Netflix and Hulu, but the apps didn't work. Oh, I'd love to tell you about the Miiverse, but that didn't work. Oh, I'd love to tell you about this, but it wasn't available, so I don't know. But I got to play this one video game, and they're like, yeah, it was fun, but not a compelling enough reason to buy the entire system.
Yeah, you know, and the problem
even
is
backwards
that,
compatibility
like,
didn't work at the time.
Really?
So slowly.
Oh my gosh.
But they're supposedly they're gonna fix all that. And
yeah, supposedly. That's
maybe
not
it's
good
already,
enough.
Maybe it's already fixed. I know some of them have been fixed for launch day. I think like the Netflix app now works, but none of the reviewers reviewed it because they were just like, wasn't available when we saw it. So
yeah,
come on, Nintendo.
You know, I
have a soft spot in my heart
for
you.
Man. I'm nervous.
They'll be okay.
I know, me too. They'll be all right. Okay, so this week was kind of exciting for Google. Number one, Nexus 4 went on sale, and they sold out completely in 50 minutes.
How many did they sell out of?
Nobody knows.
So that means nothing. Cool.
Okay. I'm doing this in the interest of fairness. Because every time Apple sells out, we're like, wow, look how fast Apple sold out.
Yeah, but Apple also gives you a number.
Not always.
Well, they at least do after the fact.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, well, Google hasn't given it a number yet, you know. And
I'm sure it's
they
more
will
than
give
20.
A number, and it will be high. Yeah. But I think what's going on here is there's clearly a lot of interest in Nexus 4. I read a couple of articles that I think unfairly besmirched Google in that they've got awful supply chain management, which is true. But the thing is that Apple, the difference between Apple and Google is Google ran out because they've got bad supply chain management. Apple runs out because they have fantastic supply chain management and they want to. You know, I think Google would have sold more phones if they could have. And they just didn't, they didn't realize how many people were going to buy it. And they didn't have enough phones, you know, and because they're not good at making them, at huge scale. I think that, but there's clearly huge interest and people are waiting.
It looks like a cool phone. It looks like a really cool phone.
It does.
And who cares about it not being on 4G? Oh, I guess I don't care because I'm not on it, so I don't know what I'm missing out on.
Right. I'll be honest with you, James.
Are you on?
LTE's pretty fast.
Is that what you're using?
Yeah. LTE is very fast. I like it. I like it quite a bit.
Okay. Okay.
But the thing is, oh, you know what the other thing? Oh, okay, this is totally off topic, really quick. There is no, like, the speedtest.net, I don't know if you ever,
Yeah,
test
which
your
is Flash
account
based.
FM. Yeah, well, they have apps for every other platform out there, so you can do a good, solid speed test, use their databases, whatnot. There isn't one for Windows Phone 8, and so
Just go to the
I have
website.
absolutely no.
Doesn't have Flash on that phone?
What did you? No, there is no mobile Flash anymore.
Oh. Never mind.
Yeah, that's why they had to like get all the HTML5 features in there. But so my point was going to be, yeah, Nexus 4 sold out like crazy, and that's, congratulations, Google. That's pretty cool. And the other thing I was going to say is clearly people are willing to wait for the phone, which is a big deal because generally speaking, people weren't willing to wait for a specific Android. If they were sold out, they got a different brand. Most people didn't wait for the one that they want. They just got whatever was available. And you're starting to see this trend that there's two types of users. There's when it comes to the Android world. There are Galaxy S users for Samsung, people who want the Galaxy S because it's available and it's, affordable and whatever. And then there are like your super users, your really excited people who get the Nexuses. And they like they like the Nexus phones. But that's cool. The other thing is Google Fiber turned on this week in Kansas City, and I
Woohoo!
wish I lived in Kansas City
It's not
because
too late.
who needs a light life when you have 700 megabytes per second downtime? Holy cow!
That's pretty
Their
fast.
hardline are and yeah, it's because so they talked about it was going to be gigabyte internet, and so real speeds there it's never that high. As what you're like actually get, which is fine, because then there's a number of reasons why you're actually getting 100 megabytes, but it results in an equivalent of 700 megabytes. But the fact of the matter is that I get 3 megabytes at home, and that's like two. And
That's
that is
less
not.
than
That's two
700.
orders of. I know. That's two orders of magnitude higher. Oh my gosh, I am so jealous. You know what? Do people who work for Google only get like and actually work in Mountain View at the Google headquarters only get like 500-600 gigabyte or megabyte downtime. They don't get it that high working for Google. It's crazy. It gets me so excited. They're gonna be I because you know because this is gonna change stuff. Google's gonna put it in enough cities and everybody else is gonna have to respond because eventually people are gonna start demanding it. And if Google does this and they're not losing money, this becomes a big deal. And the other thing they said was like, people are just turning their Wi-Fi routers on without any password protection because the wireless speeds are like 400 megabytes per second, which is still orders of magnitude larger than mine. And what they're saying is the down speed is so fast that people are like, yeah, so what? Somebody else is going to use my Wi-Fi router. What do I care? I got plenty of bandwidth, which is, and this is going to change things. I'm excited for it. This is fun.
Well, see, you actually live in a place that stands a chance of getting it in a reasonable amount of time. I do not.
Yeah, that's true.
If I lived in
Well,
Portland, maybe.
the thing is, and I really do believe that what's going to happen is they're going to bid it in enough towns where people are going to start really demanding it. It's going to be obvious that this is going to become a business for them, and all of a sudden the other guys are going to have to compete. And then that's the whole point of this, right? Their goal is not to become a mo or a internet service provider. Their goal is to change what the internet service providers how they operate. Their goal is to really challenge them and, time to step up, boys. And girls, there are girls that are, stealing money from us by
Ladies.
giving us bad internet service too. Yeah, it's a good point. I don't want to besmirch just men. We'll besmirch the ladies working there as
That's
well.
amazing.
But oh, pretty cool. Pretty cool.
I take it. They also updated Google TV this week.
Yeah? Is it Is it super amazing, fantastic?
It's now faster and easier. It's classic
Oh, that's
Google,
great.
where they're just, slowly improve things.
Yeah.
They made it so they added a voice search where you can, on your remote control, there's a mic, and so you speak into the remote control, and you could search for stuff just like,
Oh.
Google Voice search you would expect. They also have this thing called Prime Time that, they, let's say you want to watch something but you don't know what to watch, they'll say, here's what we think you would like based on your viewing history and, your other likes and stuff.
Right.
Another googly thing to do. They made YouTube easier to watch, shocker, and some other things. But it just sounds like they have done a good job of refining, the ex TV experience. And you watch the promo video and you're like, man, actually, that looks pretty cool.
Right.
If I was into television, I would consider
Yeah.
getting one.
Yeah. I've got my cool TV computer coming sometime next year, so I'm gonna wait for that.
Wait, what?
Yeah, remember, because for through Kickstarter, I bought the Parallella,
Oh, okay.
the massively multitasking thing, and they're like, their argument was, buy it so you can program with it, and worst case scenario, it's $100 computer TV. I'm like, oh, nice, yeah. So that's my plan. Thanks, Google, but no thanks. But I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, to me, it strikes me as like the Apple TV. As long as it's treated as sort of a, you're not trying to change the world, you're just trying to make it incrementally better. And when it comes to the TV, you're going to be successful because there's a certain amount of people that want that, need that. And obviously, Google's, clever approach here is that they're allowing hardware makers to build it into their hardware, and so it comes standard, which is pretty clever. I mean, it's not going to revolutionize everything really quickly, but in 5 years, everything will look different because of these little changes. And that all the companies are making, whether it's Microsoft with the Xbox or Apple with the Apple TV or Google's TV. It's fun. It's exciting to watch the not everything in the tech world changes, in a day. Some things have to take a little time, but it's changing. Sticking with Google, this is like actually happening. Well, okay. Google is in early talks with Dish Network to launch a competitive cellular network. So when I say it's actually happening, I mean there's not rumors that they're in talks. No, they've confirmed. Yeah, we're actually talking, and this is what we're talking about. Now they're early in talks, so it may completely collapse, and nothing will ever come from it. But the fact of the matter is, Google is clearly looking into getting into the cellular business as well as being a mobile, they want to be a mobile internet service provider as much as they want to be a actual mobile or internet service provider, which is interesting because part of this has to do with the fact that it's like, so the Nexus 4 doesn't have LTE as we were talking about earlier, but when you open the thing up and you tear it down, it has the LTE chip. She's like, what? Why is that there? Well, the thought is that they'll turn it on later, with a with some sort of a software update. But it does seem that they're frustrated with the telecoms. They don't like what's going on there, and they're like Apple, where Apple didn't go with Verizon. They didn't make all of their devices open on everything because Verizon was being stupid heads. And so they did their thing, and this is Google's attack, approach. We'll just become a telecom. Pretty bold. It'll be interesting to see if that happens. What's cool for Google, what's cool about watching this with Google is this is very much they're throwing everything to the wall. It's classic Google to throw everything to the wall and see what sticks. And I don't think that this is part of a long-term strategy, but I think they're just as prepared to be the telecom of the future as they are to, be the search engine of the future or the telephone man, operator system right into the future. They're ready to be that because, Google search is not going to last forever. There needs to be something else. They need to diversify their portfolio of how they make money if they're going to survive as a company. And but they're using the enormously profitable Google search to finance all of these side projects. And one of them is, you know, a couple of them are going to stick, and it's going to be the difference that allows them to survive as a company. It's exciting to watch. I like it.
I agree. On a side note, I like the way BGR has designed their website.
Who?
The blog that you got the article off of.
Oh, right. Okay. I gotcha.
It's just very clean.
So what are you talking about? Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a good... Good job, BGR. Good job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a soccer fan, so I like these kind of things. This is actually really cool. There's for the first time, there's going to be a soccer game. I think it's actually already been played. It's the Mexican Indoor Football League. They are the referees are going to be using a smartphone.
Wait, is this sort of like the what's it called? Arena Football League of Soccer.
I don't know. It's indoor. So.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Okay.
It's not outdoor.
I'm guessing it's not as enormously popular as outdoor, and they probably have some goofy rules that.
Maybe. I don't know. I know, I play indoor soccer, and there's a little brew pub thing. Up above, yeah. There's the deck where people can sit over and watch, and we regularly have people just sitting there watching the games, and you know, they enjoy it. Total wreck, though. Different. Anyways, yeah. Not important. They're going to be using it's a Samsung Galaxy S3 to do their stuff. So here's what's cool about it is, number one, if they want to give them a card, they just show them the screen and it shows the color, and then they can type in the reason. And if there's a flag or not a flag, oh my gosh, they blow the whistle, a foul of sorts, yeah. They can say what it was. And here's the super cool part. It will automatically sync with a Twitter account. And so you as the watcher can instantly know what it was that they said and what's going on and why they said it. And you can know how much time is left in the game and all sorts of stuff. So I think it's cool. Yeah, like... That's cool. Like, I know that it was a big deal. Like, not a big deal. Okay, I don't know this for a fact. But I like, for example, in the NFL, where when the ref has a call, you know, he puts on his microphone and he tells you, here's what I said.
Right.
Yeah, here's what the infraction was. I think it would be cool to have things like that where it better connects them with the, you know, with the people watching and with the coaches in such a way where you kind of know, okay, here's what's going on and here's what they're thinking. And, football's a little weird. I don't know if it makes sense to do it in football, but you know, for something in soccer where things are going on in real time, it could make sense. I just thought that was cool.
It's cool, it's clever. Well, and what I really like about it is that they're using a, you know, a really strong infrastructure in Twitter, and you know, applying it. You know, they're not building their own infrastructure to do this. It probably took somebody like a week and a half to write this app. I got to imagine it's pretty simple.
Maybe. But, I know, like, when I'll go to baseball games, I'll subscribe to that team's official feed, which it's kind of cool, but it's also lame because it always seems to be, like, 3 minutes behind.
Right.
So it's kind of like you watch it happen, they announce what happens, and then, like, during the next play it pops up, oh, here's what happened in case you wanted to know. And you're just like, that's dumb. So it works better if you can't watch the game, I guess, but I don't know.
So last night I was watching the Stanford
Ducks.
Cardinals. What?
Oh. Ooh, that was a good game.
I was watching the Stanford Cardinals
especially
beat down
if you're an OSU,
the Oregon Ducks.
Especially if you're a Beaver fan, that was a good game.
You know what? I'm kind of a Stanford fan. I always have been. Didn't accept me, but whatever. I didn't really try that hard.
They also beat OSU, which is sad. Which, if they win next week, they'll be first in the division or league or whatever.
Nice. But it's so funny. We're sitting there watching, and there's actually we're, it was it's interesting. We were talking about it earlier in the day. Our cousin Timmy and I, and we're sitting there, and I was saying, I wonder how much of a delay there is with the ESPN Zone app, the ESPN app, when it's updating you on you know how the games go. Because I gotta imagine that there's that they put in a certain delay because there's a delay just in processing the film and distributing it. Even if you don't have a couple second delay for like, you know,
Yeah.
bleeping stuff out, there is a delay
It's just a
and
technical delay.
you know, yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. And I gotta
I mean, it
imagine that
beams up the
the
space and back. It takes a little
oh
while.
yeah. And you know, and I gotta imagine that your device actually is faster than that. So they got to put a delay in of some sort so that you don't get the information on your phone before it happens in the game. And evidently they don't put that much of a delay in it because they're sitting there on it's the third down, and they go for it to try to get into the end zone. Right? Stanford tries to get into the end zone. And all of a sudden, Timmy gets a text message, and he pulls his phone out of his pocket, and he goes, "Oh, 'cause it had already notified him that Stanford had won." We're just like, "What?" And he goes, "Nothing." And I was like, "But I saw what happened, so I put it together." I was like, "Oh, well, sweet, my team wins, so I don't mind." But so. And just it, they, you know, they, there's an. It's interesting the delay that some sports have and others don't. But yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Anyways, so a couple other things were going on Wednesday, Thursday. Number one, NASA kind of. There's an article about NASA and their 3D printing. So we talk about 3D printing on this show a bit because I like it. I think it's pretty cool technology. Well, NASA has done. They've gotten not necessarily the Holy Grail, but the big thing that everybody wants is the ability to print metal objects. That's a
Like
huge
handguns.
change because, yeah, well, exactly. Actually, they realize you don't have to, and they still work pretty well. But for NASA, it's kind of because of chemical stuff and chemical interactions and what they're doing with it, it's important to have, you know. The metals that you use be the right metals. Well, they've developed this really cool laser-based 3D printer, and now they can print out metal parts. And the really nice part about it is because of how they like what they're saying. They're like, you know, sometimes you know, they I think we were saying it's like copper or nickel that they're using, and it's a type of sintering process, which sintering is when you heat a metal up. To the point where it starts moving around in a semi-liquid state, but
Wow.
it's not so hard that it actually deforms. And so, like, molecules can propagate together. And when you have a powder and you sinter it, basically it doesn't actually melt, but it fuses. It becomes a solid piece of metal.
Huh.
That's essentially what they're doing, but they're doing it one layer at a time with a laser. So they're doing it with like hyper precision. And then they can use this metal, these metal objects. They can coat them. They can do all sorts of chemical stuff to them.
Does
And
it
so, like,
smell?
if you need it to be steel or you need to have different structural properties, you can add stuff to it. And they're actually using these in their rockets. So, you know, this is
Wow.
why you keep NASA around. I mean, this is like legit.
Yeah.
This is the future of 3D printing. Pretty exciting. And yeah, they got it working.
Wow,
And
very
I
cool.
can't wait to see, you know. Once again, you know, as the cost of plastic 3D printers are plummeting and becoming more and more widespread in industries, same thing's going to happen with metal 3D printer. It will ne never get rid of traditional
Fab.
Manufacturing techniques completely, but you know, it'll
That's cool.
change the yeah, it's yeah, definitely excited about it. And the other big thing that kind of came down on Thursday. Finally got working teleportation, so
About
no need
time.
to transport anymore. Pretty cool.
It's
Anyways, moving
about
on. I'm just
time. What
kidding.
does that mean?
So, this is all quantum physics stuff. It's pretty fun. Do you
So,
know?
like, have they teleported a human yet?
Not quite yet.
Next story.
They've gotten close in that they were able to teleport
They've
one
gotten
bit of
close.
information.
Wait, what?
They were able to teleport one bit of information, as in like a one or a zero,
Well, that's
instantaneously.
what? I don't understand.
So let me explain. So basically, what they're trying
Like,
to
have
do
they
is
done
they're
like
trying
an
to get.
apple? Have they even
No,
done
they've.
like an atom, like a
No.
molecule?
No.
So, what have they transported again?
Information.
Isn't that what the internet does? I don't understand.
So
Aren't
no,
we like
because
doing
the
it right now?
so what we are doing right now is we photons. So basically, the I my image my sound gets captured. That
Okay.
information is processed. It is
And
sent
teleported over to
wirelessly.
me.
It is set. It travels wirelessly from
Okay.
my computer through space and time to the router. Then it goes through a bunch of routers through space and time to your computer, and then so it's and it makes a couple of detours. So what this thing does is instead of traveling through space and time, what happens on one end happens on the other end instantaneously. They happen at the same time. It's as though they are right. The transmitter and the receiver are right next to each other when they're, in this case, 150 meters apart. And the big deal about this is that really and truly, the biggest limitation on speed of communication is the speed of light, which is very fast,
It's pretty
but actually
fast.
not that fast. And
Sure.
compared, I mean, because this is literally information. It's as though all
Okay,
information is at the same location.
so great for them. They moved a bit.
Yes.
So what's next? Like, what are we doing humans? What are we doing an apple? And then a bird, like they
It's not
did in Harry
actually.
Potter.
Yeah. It's not actually the goal. So.
What? Why are we
Sorry.
talking about this?
Because it's the future of the internet. This is
No,
how
it's
the internet will
not.
work.
Oh, the
Yes, it
internet.
is.
Okay, the
Yeah.
internet.
This is the future of how networks will be built. It's actually a pretty big deal, because it's gonna
It'll make
it's a
LTE
major.
sound super slow.
Oh yeah, I mean, but
Google
literally, because I
Fiber would be
mean, because
dumb.
well, so this is what will
Well,
happen
it's still my
if you
bandwidth
and I
issues,
want
I
to
guess.
communicate. Yeah, if you and I want to communicate directly, you'll have a phone connected to my. You'll have a receiver connected to my receiver. We can be anywhere in the world and communicate. Literally instantaneously, as though we're in the same room
Wow.
to each other. Yeah, and they're going to build a network of routers like they do with the rest of the internet, and they'll have a robust
Will
communication
that allow us
system,
to get
and it'll.
real-time images off of Mars?
Yeah, that's another big deal.
Okay, that's cool.
That you literally, you can, the
So how
entire
does it work? Does it
universe.
make like a wormhole or something?
No, so this is one of the
Is
things
there
that's called.
traveling involved? Then it's just really fast, or does it not
No,
actually travel?
it doesn't actually travel,
It
sort of.
teleports.
So this is what happens. So it's called entanglement is what they're using. But you basically have two particles and they get entangled. And when they say entangle, it's you have two physical particles, but it's like they're part of the same. They're together. And what they find is that they act as though they're right next to each other. They're being affected by the same forces. But it actually doesn't matter how far apart they are. And whatever forces are affecting one side affect the other side as though it were being affected by the same forces. And it takes into account the idea that, electrons don't orbit around the nucleus of an atom in a circular thing. There are likelihoods that they will be in a certain orbit, but but there's certain likelihoods that it will be on the other side of the universe in the next moment. And it takes advantage of those sorts of physics principles. And it's pretty wacky. But they're actually getting real results from it. So they're teleporting information. That's crazy. It's absolutely absurd what they're doing. And the idea is that eventually, you'll build these into, you won't need satellites because you don't have to, you won't have any line of sight problems. You'll just put this onto a probe, you'll throw the probe on Mars, and you'll have no bandwidth limitations outside of, what you can do as though you were hardwired communicating. There are a couple of weird things like your probabilities aren't perfect that information gets through, but but there's already a lot of computer techniques that we have that allow us to kind of get over that and get around that. There's still a lot of engineering to go, but there's nothing that's there are no hurdles that are showstoppers. There's nothing that people say, well, we haven't actually figured out how we'll do this yet. There are things, there's just a couple of things that are like, we just have to get better at doing this, which is, you know, pretty big news. So, you know, I don't know. It'll be interesting when this is, when this actually comes to fruition. Could be 10 years, could be 20 years, but, it'll change quite a bit. It'll probably be crazy expensive at first. And so don't expect it to be built into your phones at first, but you know, this is the future, man. And that's what we talk about. What's next? This is next.
But it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, it's cool.
Yeah, I thought so. So we got a couple minutes left. I got one other thing I wanted to talk about, but you know, it looks. Did you have anything else you want to talk about?
Do you know how Facebook organizes its news feed?
No, I do not.
It's not chronological, in case you didn't know that.
Oh, I did know that.
It's actually pretty interesting. So they're now doing this whole like. If you have a fan page and are popular, so we don't have to worry about it, they will charge you to have your posts sent to its users.
Yeah.
I mean, like, in some cases, they're like $3,000 per post. And,
whoa.
Yeah, and I guess they were been divvying it up to show people, like, how many of them are organic, you know, they propped up in the, you know, because of the algorithm versus you paid for it. And in a lot of cases, they're like, zero organic.
Oh my gosh.
And so Facebook, in an attempt to, you know, quiet the complaints, has opened up the kimono slightly on how that works. And if they're like, it's like Google search, we change it every week.
Right.
You know, yeah, we'll tell you what it is today. It'll be different in a week from now, and a year from now, you won't even recognize it, type of thing.
Right.
Another reason why you don't really patent those things, because it's evolving. But what one of the things that I think about it, and some of them are like, they're intuitive, and I like this about Facebook, and I read this on a blog recently that they're going to institute something similar, and I was like, huh, it's cool. So basically what they'll do is they take into account, like, when's the last time you looked, and you know, what are the recent ones that you liked. You know, so they'll show you, like, so if you liked one from a specific friend, they'll show you more from that friend. If you liked a specific topic, if you have another friend who does something in a similar topic, they will show you that one. Also, if you dislike or spam something, they'll obviously show you less of those. You know, and kind of that's how it works. And it's interesting. I don't know if you've done this, but if you visit Facebook regularly, the posts are okay. You know, every once in a while, you're like, oh, there's a good one. But if you get distracted with life and don't visit Facebook for like 4 or 5 days, and then you visit, I don't know if you've noticed this, but it's like every single post is awesome. I've done this where that happened to me, and I'm just like, oh, like. And then you finally get to where it's got to like reload the page, and then you're like, okay, all right, less likes. And it's just one of those where, because if you've gone more frequently, they're going to show you, they try to show you newer content. And so it's not the they don't, you know, and they know it, where it's like, this isn't the one that you absolutely love. Which I thought was cool. And I was reading a blog, pandodaily.com tech blog is, which is really like the next generation of TechCrunch really. they were saying like their whole thing is they are also going to detect how often you visit the site and when's the last time you saw it. And at the bottom of their site, they have, for me, it's at the bottom, they have a week in review where they just show the top news stories by the day of the week. But if it's like you haven't gone very often and you only check like once a week, they'll move that up to the top for you because they can tell when you were last here. And there's like, we just want to give you a bird's eye view of what's been going on. And like Facebook, they were saying there literally is no duplication of a news feed. It's different for every single user all the time.
Yeah.
And
which makes sense.
Yeah. And, but even like Pando Daily is heading in this direction where it's like, we're going to segment the types of readers that we have. There's going to be the ones who visit, you know, every 5 minutes. There's going to be the ones who visit once a week. There's going to be the ones who are only on the RSS feed. You know what I mean? They're going to say, like, we're going to figure out who are our different types of users, and we're literally going to design our site to display different content that's optimized for that person so that they enjoy what they saw, which
right.
I'm like, it might be a little weird if you get one who visits once a week and it was like, oh, this is awesome. Then he visits more often, and all of a sudden the site changes on him because he moved into a different category all of a sudden. But which is exactly what Facebook's thing does, which, you know, if you visit more often, they don't show you the top of the top. They're going to show you the top new.
Right.
Since you've last been there, I guess. And since you have less to pull from and they still want to fill the feed up, that's not going to be as good. But
the other weird thing that Facebook does, and I absolutely am sure that they do this, because it's like if you by clicking on somebody's profile, that's indicating that you want that information and you want it at the top of your list first time you go and look there. And the more often you look at somebody's profile, the more often that their information is going to hit the top of your newsfeed. And, you know, you don't even have to like stuff, and they're keeping track of what you like based on what you're looking at. And so it's weird when you, like, somebody makes some sort of a post that gets a lot of likes, and you look at their webpage, and all of a sudden you get every update from them. You're like, I don't even like this person. Why are you giving this to me? I'm friends with them because I feel like I have to. Go away. Come on. Get it back in the game, Facebook. It's so funny because, like, when people complain about, well, I don't like the political news on Facebook, you know, I don't like my friends talking about politics, or I don't like my friends talking about religion, like, you know, whatever, you know, like, it's like, you honestly, you are looking that out. The very fact that you're getting it indicates that you're looking at it because their algorithm keeps track of it. So you want to know what? I'm sorry. You don't like that stuff. Don't look at it. It goes away. You know, I don't get political posts on my Facebook wall because – well, I get in a little bit more of it lately because of
what you did.
Because of the recent election. Yeah. Yeah. Facebook decided, oh, I guess you do like politics. Oh, I'm just kidding. go take it back.
That's how it works.
I don't want to hear. Yeah. But it's funny, you know, that first few days after the election, there was a lot of political news, and it's just top news stories or really popular political stuff. And I'm sure within 3 or 4 months, because I never look at anybody's political stuff on Facebook.
And by look at it, you mean you don't click on links or like them, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or even, you know, if you put too much political stuff on your page, I don't go to your page.
Do you actually visit people's pages?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
cool. You don't?
No.
People put tons of effort into their pages. I want to see what, you know, like...
Cool.
You know, see the timelines.
Actually, I mostly use Facebook via Flipboard on my iPhone.
Oh, okay.
The only time I actually visit Facebook is to go play my Facebook games.
Oh, that's funny. I like how Facebook looks. I think it's a fun looking site. And I like
the way Flipboard looks. And it doesn't do any of their crazy filtering. I get to stream.
Right. Well, it's funny though. I'm like, you know, it's people. When people get crazy search results on Google, Google's algorithm adjusts to you. The fact that you got that crazy result means that Google thought you would like it. So I'm not sure what you're looking up the rest of the time, but guess what? This is what it turns into.
Yeah, it's a machine calculating things. It's not trying to mess with you.
Yeah.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Well, and what's so crazy about it is that this is not crowdsourced. This is what everybody else thinks. No, this is what Google thinks about you. It's reflective. Just pay attention to that with these sorts of things. These are insights into the type of things you look at and the type of person you are. Let that one sink in there for a little bit. And take a look at yourself. If you don't like what you're online, it's not their fault. that was a little bit harsh. Anyways, so guess what? So electric motors. I was trying to remember. I was like, why did I think this was an interesting news story? But now I remember. So electric motors are kind of a problem. Or they're awesome, but they're kind of a problem. There is an issue with electric motors.
Like the Chevy Volt, right? That's got an electric motor.
Yeah, Chevy Volt, the Motor Trend's Car of the Year, the Tesla S, which, congratulations,
Trains.
Tesla. Awesome. Well done.
Locomotives.
Well, pretty much anybody who uses a DC electric motor, which is pretty much all electric cars, there's this issue. Basically, there's two types of electric motors. There's AC motors and DC motors. DC motors have a steady state magnet inside of them, and what happens is, based on the and how much voltage there is, and how much amperage, and how they kind of, and the amperage is decided by the voltage, blah, blah, blah. Basically, what happens is the DC motor acts, it'll turn faster and slower based on how much voltage there is. Now, this should be pretty intuitive to anybody who's ever played with a DC electric motor before.
So, not me.
If you put more power to it, it goes faster. You take power away, it goes slower.
Cool.
Whereas AC motors are interesting in that they are controlled by the their speed is determined not by the amount of voltage. What the voltage determines is the torque, how hard it pushes. But what actually controls the speed is how quickly it fluctuates. So as it goes from as the current goes positive, it has a positive voltage. As it goes negative, it has a negative voltage, and that's your phase. And you know, power into your house is 60 hertz, and so AC motors, their speed is determined by how many hertz they're getting. And to regulate the speed of an AC motor, it's all about what the gears that you have in place. Every different speed needs a different gear. So the obvious advantage here with an electric motor is you have an electric motor and you can do all sorts of speeds between 0 and 100, 0 and 100%, and you can get really, really great, real smooth transitions. But with an AC motor, you've got one speed, and if you want to change speeds, you have to change gears. And so there's absolutely no movement. And for cars, obviously, like the gas, the gas gives you between 0 and 100% of the gas of the motor speed, and then each gear gives you a different range. So the goal is to have adjustable motors. The problem and the reason why DC motors – this is difficult is because DC motors require powerful steady state magnets, natural magnets, and they use rare earth like neodymium and other metals. And the problem with rare earth metals that have really strong magnetism is that they're rare. And the fact that they're rare makes them incredibly expensive. And the most plentiful mines for rare earths in the world are in China. And as buddy-buddy as we are with China, that doesn't thrill people a whole lot if the future of our automotive industry is going to be electric. They want to figure something else out. Well, what is exciting, and I like this, is basically the advent of semiconductors has allowed a system by which you can basically regulate the speed of an AC motor using computer technology, essentially, or circuitry. And so basically what's going on is what's really awesome. They like how an AC motors don't have, or not, so a lot of them do, but the most don't have any magnets in them. What they have is they have the coils on the outside that flip on and off depending on what hertz they are. It's just hardwired, and what it does is it fluctuates these magnetic fields back and forth, and depending on how the magnetic field is fluctuating, there's a rotor in the center that has a bunch of bars on it, and it's made out of metal, and those magnetic fields generate a current in that rotor in the center. That rotor, the electrical current moving, creates a magnetic field that lags the magnetic field from the incoming power, and so it actually it's off phase. It's positioned differently, and because it's positioned differently, that causes it to move, and all of a sudden the rotor starts to move. What's nutty about AC motors is that they don't actually have any steady state magnets. So the fact that we've now got these really powerful semiconductor technologies that, you know, and silicon was like, you know, crazy abundant in our world, thankfully. So we can build these really advanced technologies that basically allow us to use non-magnetic motors for cars. There's still a bit of ways that we got to go before this is going to replace DC motors. But the exciting part is that they're going to be crazy cheap compared to
Cool.
DC motors. Yeah, so they'll actually really drive down the price of these cars. They'll make them way safer because when you get into an accident and you got a gigantic magnet in the front of your car, that can cause problems. And whereas AC motors are completely inert when they're off, and there's other cool things that, like, one of the big concerns early on was, will you be able to do recuperative stuff? Can you recapture energy, or do you need a magnet in order to do that? It turns out you don't with these. They recapture energy just as efficiently as a DC motor. They have the braking function, as it were. It's like there's no downside here other than it's early in the development phase, and they just got to get better engineering
So
involved
who's
in order
they?
to they. They, that's a couple of companies. Let me see. I can't remember. I
That's
did
some
not write
research
that down.
companies.
Dude, I barely even remember why I got this article. Clearly, I thought it was
Okay,
I'm
some
actually
research
really excited
places.
about this.
It's not
Yeah.
necessarily like GM or Tesla or anything.
No,
It's
no, no, no. Yeah.
cool, which is good because that means it could roll out to most car manufacturers.
Yeah. Well, and this is the sort of thing that my hero Elon Musk will definitely get into because, you know, this is a big deal for Tesla, this sort of thing. But probably the only place in the world you'll hear about this, so you're welcome. Pretty interesting. Changes the game.
Wow.
Oh, I'm excited about it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That is very cool. I like it. They don't really give any timelines, do they? It's just when it
No,
gets developed, it'll get developed.
but it's the sort of thing that, I mean, it's there it's I yeah, they don't give any timelines, but I think it's going to be pretty rapid now that it's kind of now that these research teams out there that it's proving it's possible. Somebody like Tesla is going to suddenly go, this is worth making a serious investment, and you know, all of a sudden you're going to have real change, you know, a real change because they've proven that no, this works. This works very well. And
Yeah. Cool.
yeah.
That's awesome.
Fun, fun, fun.
Well, I'd ask you if anything cool is going on, but it sounds like you're still trying to make plans for next week.
Yeah. Well, gonna weep to myself as I eat a whole turkey at home. Actually, don't worry, all of our audiences. There is one opportunity you can invite me over to eat Thanksgiving at your place, so
Hey,
I don't have to
I already
leave.
invited you, so there's that.
That's a good point. What about you? So, oh wait, I guess we already kind of talked about that, didn't we?
Yeah, I'm
Did anything exciting?
refinishing cabinets is
Yeah.
what I've been doing.
Have you had
Lots
super
and lots of
awesome
sanding.
robots? Or did you build a website for that? Or it's pretty low tech.
Yeah, just no, the only thing is my forearms are sore, which makes clicking mice and tapping on the keyboard rough. But I'm taking all next week off, so I will
Oh,
just be doing
nice.
manual labor instead for free. It's gonna be
Nice.
great.
I won't be taking next week up off. I might
I
not even be
know.
taking Friday off, so.
Dang, cool.
Yeah.
You're working. It's not a bad thing. Awesome. Well, dude, thanks. And thank you, everybody else, for joining us. My name is James Furlow, and my very thankful brother is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time. Dude, let's just go live. We're done. Start broadcast. Okay.
I agree. Let's do it.
Recording. All right, good.